Marilyn Loren and Delaware Valley. Welcome to the Soloff and Servano show here on WWDB Talk 860. We've got an awesome show. Today's conversation is going to be about auto accidents, MVAs, if you will. Our host, John Servanos, is in the house. John, how are you, sir?
Swinging for the fences.
Oh, I like that. Fantastic.
And occasionally I hit the ball, so I'm feeling all right about it.
That's what I like. And who's your elder statesman there to the right on the screen, Mr. Drew Van Bargen?
Drew is a great attorney. He works very hard and is our house specialist when it comes to motor vehicle accidents.
Fantastic. And Drew, I will tell you, and this is a fact, John speaks incredibly highly of you on a regular basis. So I will just go from there. If you will, remind our, because you've been on a number of broadcasts, remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and elaborate on what John had said.
Yeah, I'm Drew Van Bargen, personal injury attorney at Soloff and Servanos. I've been practicing for about 11 years now, which is kind of hard to believe. It feels like just yesterday I graduated law school. But, you know, we do pretty much any type of personal injury case you could think of, runs the gamut from, you know, the most complex cases to, you know, your simple auto accidents, which is what we're here to talk about today.
And having said that, you're also a competitive athlete, Division I athlete, correct?
I was, yeah. Back in my heyday, I played soccer at Monmouth University. And now I just kind of dabble in a bunch of different stuff to stay active.
Sounds good. Any coaching?
No, not yet. I think probably once my son gets a little bit older, you know, that'll happen within the next 5 years, I predict.
And are we looking at soccer, baseball, football?
You know, I don't really care what he plays. I just hope it's something. You know,
I'm just telling you, if it's football, Uncle Joe's coming over once he hits five or six, and we'll just take it from there. But no, it's great to have you on the broadcast. We're going to talk about auto accidents and MVAs. And I'll tell you, they're the most likely thing, you know, types of accidents that somebody, you know, could get in, and they're the most misunderstood. Okay, we watch TV. You see the speaking of sports, you know, the Rogers rate, Liberty, all these great insurance companies, but no one ever talks about personal injury protection on those commercials. Before we get into that conversation, let's bring in Olivia Giacomucci of Weinemann Pain and Wellness. Olivia, how are you? If you will, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure, I'm good. Thanks, Joe. And thanks, John and Drew, for having me on the show. Like you said, my name is Olivia. I'm the director of marketing at Weinemann Pain and Wellness. We're a rehab medical practice in Center City, Philadelphia, located on JFK, 17th and JFK. And we treat patients represented by personal injury, workers' comp, or MVA attorneys. And some of the services we provide for them are physical therapy, chiropractic care, pain management, psychology, et cetera.
And so we're going to get into the medical conversation, but I want to get into, John and I were talking, it's a very important conversation because it delves into a lot of areas, but motor vehicle accidents. And Olivia's been on a lot of broadcasts with me now, and it's a life experience that I bring up all the time because it's a great example of, you know, a motor vehicle accident may seem like it's not a catastrophic injury at the point, but it may very well be. Either way, you need to be protected, and you need to know that when you're making your choice of auto insurance. Okay, so me and my wife getting a fender bender. We're just kids. We get hit by some guy from behind us. Doesn't seem like much. He's 10 feet, maybe 10 feet away from us. You met her. She's got a scar from here to here. Was she hurt at the beginning? She didn't think so. We didn't know anything about full tort, limited tort, any of that. We're going to get into it. So, Drew, let's talk about first things individuals should do, okay? Should they get in an auto accident at the scene of the auto accident?
Yeah, I think the first and foremost, you know, contacting the police, making sure they show up to fully document everything would be critical. You know, we rely upon police reports to establish liability in cases. And we also rely upon police reports in large part because that's going to contain a lot of insurance information that we're going to need down the line. So that's always probably the first step. And then secondarily, I would say at the scene, taking photographs, capturing the property damage that you've sustained to your vehicle as well as to the other vehicle. And just some photographs of what the geographic area looks like would be helpful as well. And then, if you're in pain, it's always a good idea to immediately seek medical attention as opposed to, saying, oh, like I'm okay. And a lot of people, they don't feel right, but they want to take that macho approach and they'll tell the police that they're not injured, and that'll get documented. And then down the line, they might be questioned, well, why did you tell the officer that you didn't need any medical help? So, we all want to approach things in a macho-like manner, but if you are experiencing pain, it's certainly prudent to seek out medical care immediately.
So everything you just said was why I brought up the situation with my wife. She did not feel pain. And so therefore I don't even think we called a doctor until 2 or 3 days later, because you never know. How often does somebody get injured at an accident if it doesn't seem catastrophic, but it is. And your point, and I'm going to delve into a lot of these areas, but your point to everybody wants to, I'm okay. And you don't really know if you're okay. And what's really important is being educated on not just the law, but what the hell you're up against. You know what I mean? Like, how many people have no idea? I mean, I got insurance, Drew. I mean, don't they just send me the check? That's why I paid the damn insurance. I'm calling them tomorrow. All of a sudden, my neck's hurting. My point is, if you don't know any better, and it's not much different than a work injury where you just go to your boss, you think everybody's got your best interest at heart. But that's not always the case. I'm going to throw a scenario at you and say this. Your first point was a great point about the police and calling the police. I mean, and obvious. But in Philly, as you know, sometimes they don't come because it doesn't seem like a catastrophic accident.
That's true.
It's the norm. What do you, is it worth then going after you get the evidence that you talked about? And is it worth then going to the station and filing a report? If for example, that accident that I told you about that ended up in major surgery,
Yeah.
is that type of accident? Literally speaking, they didn't show up because they didn't think it was catastrophic. What are your thoughts about going to the station?
Yeah, I mean, before you go to the station, you're still going to need to exchange some information at the scene so that you can give the police when you do go down to the station information to put into the police report. So, to your point, in Philadelphia in particular, if you're in a what seems like a relatively minor or moderate collision, they might not come. It's like the flip of a coin as to whether or not they show up. So, at that point, you do have to take the onus of exchanging information. Not just license and insurance, but I would also recommend people take pictures of the tags because sometimes people will hand you an insurance card, and it appears like they have insurance, but then you come to find out the policy was not in effect. And as a lawyer, one thing that we can do is we can do a tag search, but we need to know what the tag is. So taking a photograph of the other vehicle and its plates is a good idea. But then, as you said, once you have that information, it is still beneficial to go down to the local station and make a report so that you have some type of documentation to substantiate what you claim occurred. Because there are different insurance companies and other entities who will ask, where's the police report from the incident? You can tell them that you tried and no one showed up, but it's much better to be able to hand them something rather than nothing.
And so I asked, and I bring these up because one time I was at Whole Foods, it was raining, my wife was getting a food order, And this woman and I were backing out. I'm telling you, Drew, we touched, like just touched. And I don't even, I think I was doing radio back then, but I immediately panicked. Like, I'm like, what the hell's going on? Right. Because, you know, I wanted to make sure she was okay and all that. And, but it's just so important to understand, to try to have a clear head so that you can make, you know, you can make a rash decision on the information that you need to get. You're obvious, and in many cases, as you know, the clients you've represented, sometimes they can feel the pain at the at the scene of the accident, and they're going right to the emergency room. In that case, you know, you can only do the best you can. Obviously, medical, like you mentioned, getting medical attention is extremely important. Here's a question. What should people not do, okay, at the scene of the accident or any time after that, you know, where, you know, things that they, you know, should avoid doing?
Yeah, I think the thing that sticks out the most is probably not necessarily something you would do at the scene, but in the immediate aftermath, you know, you have the inclination to make a report to insurance. And sometimes insurance companies, they'll immediately want you to give a recorded statement. And we have clients all the time who will give recorded statements prior to retaining us. And then, you know, we come to find out later that they said certain things that, you know, might not necessarily tank their case, but certainly aren't helpful either. You know, there could be a scenario where maybe they don't admit that they're at fault, but they tell their insurance company a record statement that they're not really sure what happened. But then when they come to us, they seem pretty certain as to what happened. And it's like, how can we harmonize these two things? You're telling us exactly what happened and you're very confident, but just yesterday you gave a record statement and you said that you weren't really sure. I mean, I see that a bunch. So I would say it's, you know, mainly making sure that if you are going to be pursuing a claim, that prior to giving any type of recorded statement, that you retain a lawyer first. And that'll help protect your rights as you move forward.
Okay, that was exactly what was on my mind when I asked you that question. So many people, the magic question. How you feeling? You mentioned it earlier. Okay, I feel okay. I've heard from attorneys like yourself, maybe from you, okay, doing previous broadcasts that, and if I give my wife's example of if you were to ask her how she was, well, she was in shock. I mean, obviously we both were. When we got in the accident, we were just kids, but you think you're okay. And I've heard in some of our previous conversations where you may hear that 2 years later after several surgeries or whatever, because that's a recorded statement. And you know, like you mentioned, I mean, in many cases, unless you're really hurt, and I don't mean you're not really hurt, but I mean, I'm saying you're in an ambulance going to the hospital with contusions all over you know, it's a natural inclination to sit there no matter how you're feeling, how you know, I'm sure plenty of pro football players, hockey player, whatever, as they come off the ice or, you know, out of the, you know, off getting carried off the field, how you feeling? I'm feeling all right. Okay, you're all right. Well, it's the same sort of scenario. And like you mentioned, you know, you may, that's something that they're not your friend in that situation. Those are things in those recorded statements that they may use literally against you, correct?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, John and I see it right now in a case. It's not an auto accident case, but it's a different type of case. And, you know, there's always, you know, things that they're going to try to do to trip you up and to try to dismantle your case in some way, shape, or form. So, you just have to be mindful.
Now, here's something that Olivia does a lot when she gets an accident. She's always assaulting the other people. Now, is that's got to be a no-no, right?
I was actually going to
Yes,
say
it's not
that
ideal.
Drew was saying, I was actually going to say that Drew is saying what he's talking about is so important because I'm 24. Luckily, I haven't had that many experiences with getting in accidents or getting hurt. And I did not know what steps I should take, let alone what the first step would be, until I started working in this industry. And once I found out that you should call a lawyer before your insurance or before anything else, I was shocked. And God forbid I did get into a bad accident before starting this job, I absolutely would have made the wrong move.
Yeah, I mean, I've had the benefit of just learning from, these outstanding attorneys, what to do and what not to do. But it's just not something that you get educated on. It's a situation where, and in a lot, I'll ask John Andrew, but in your journeys, I don't know how many thousands of times you've been talked. People have told you they're not litigious. They got insurance, right? You're required to have the insurance. And they're in bad shape when it comes to their physicality due to an accident, but they're not only not getting educated, they're in a sense, their general, demeanor is, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to, John, how often, I mean, obviously that's a normal thing. Talk about that and people choosing to, at least initially, till they realize that there's no friend on the other side. And in fact, they're pushing back when it comes to the insurance company. Talk about that challenge, a lot of ways where people choose not to exercise their rights until, not that it's too late often, but till way after the fact.
Well, that question is directed at me. I can tell you that in my experience,
John, move up just a little bit.
all right, in my experience, I think what happens, people get nervous at the scene. They're anxious. Police officer shows up and they just start talking and they become agreeable. They don't want to antagonize the other person, so sometimes they'll just kind of agree with what's being said at the scene. And, like Drew said, you want to make sure that police report is as accurate as possible. So you have to be very careful about what you say and not say. And sometimes it's okay not to say all that much, because when you get hit, 10 to 1, you're not feeling anything right away, unless you're breaking bones or there's something really catastrophic going on. 6 hours later, 7 hours later, you're sitting there getting ready to go to bed, and you're like, Jesus, what's wrong with my neck? What's wrong with my back? And kind of laugh about soft tissue injuries, which don't involve bones. But those injuries can become very, very difficult to treat, and especially if you wait a while to try to treat them. So my advice to folks who are in accidents, try not to say too much at the scene, because what you say at the scene will be, as they say in the criminal context, used against you. And not to suggest that everybody's saying something that's not accurate, just be careful about and mindful about what you're saying at the scene of the accident.
Well, the reason I bring that up too, John, is a lot of people choose not to be educated, and the last thing on their mind is potentially a lawsuit, their physicality, their health, and they think it's not. But what they don't realize, and Drew, I'll ask you, is calling you up for advice, okay, and getting and being educated at the scene of the or far or after the scene of the crime, after you get the evidence and all that, to make sure, because your car might be messed up or whatever, but to make sure that you have all the facts, calling up an attorney is to get educated on everything before, so you understand, because you don't really understand what you're up against. Why would you think somebody would use your words against you when I was not feeling bad yesterday? Today I woke up poor. Well, and now all of a sudden you're getting pushback because it happens all the time. Your natural inclination would not be to go to immediately call your insurance company. Well, you're calling. I mean, to immediately call an attorney. You call your insurance company, which is exactly what they want. Okay. Talk about that. Being, we talk about the things that they need to be educated on. How many people do you think? in a percentage way, make a mistake and don't get educated before they talk to an insurance company who ends up taking their language, even though it's true, and twisting it into a pretzel and pushing back on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, like what percentage of people wait too long. I mean, I can tell you that we do see, we do receive a lot of phone calls and outreach from folks who are involved in auto accidents. And then you ask them, what was the date of your incident? And you come to find out it was, a month ago, 2 months ago, 6 months ago. And, you can only hope that what they're telling you is what they've told the insurance people that they've already spoken with. But the more time that passes before you contact a lawyer, the more potential there is for things to kind of go awry. And so, I'm probably speaking for all personal injury attorneys, we prefer that you reach out to us immediately, not just because we want to handle the case, but also because there's just so much potential for things to kind of go haywire the longer you wait. A lot of people think, well, I can try to do this on my own, and then if things don't work out, then I'll hire a lawyer. But at that point, you've already said so much, and you don't necessarily know if what you're saying is truly damaging because you've never done it before. So, the sooner the better.
It reminds me in a lot of ways of John and I just did a show on third party cases with Olivia yesterday. And when somebody gets injured on the job, your first inclination, and you have to report your injury. You got to report the accident. We're not talking about not reporting the accident. We're talking about, you're not, you didn't just fall in your own house and you're going to your doctor and you know what to expect. It's a different landscape. You need to be educated. But the first thing an injured worker thinks to do, instead of get educated on, now it's a different book. You heard Olivia. Olivia said that Weinerman Pain and Wellness represents injury victims, those injured in personal injury and workers' compensation claims. Those are legal medical claims. Those are not call your insurance company claims. There's a lot of doctors that won't do it, so we're thankful that there's a network out there. But when you're injured on a job, the last thing you're thinking about doing a lot of times is calling to get educated. You're going to your boss, and your boss is most likely going to tell you that he's going to go to, if he, depending upon what the situation is, you're going to end up at one of these work hab places. And these people are going to take you potentially on a journey that you can't even imagine. You've never met a doctor situation like that. So my point is, instead of calling a lawyer and getting educated, because now you're in it, you're injured. And by the way, you've been working with the company for 15 years, 10 years, 2 weeks. Okay. But you've been working hard. Now you would think everybody's, you get injured and you're, they got your back. Okay. And that's a lot like this right now. You paid your auto insurance. Somebody T-boned you with the damn light. No problem. Send me the check. I'm hurt. That's not what happens. And people don't find that, like you just said, until the hard way. They don't learn it until they said, I'm going to navigate this on myself because I'm not a litigious person. Certainly not calling Drew or John up from one of the best injury law firms in the city to get educated. So you understand where you're at. They don't do it. And so since they don't do it,
You want me to add something to that?
yes, please.
Here's a real insult to injury, if you want to add insult to injury. You get smacked on the Schuylkill Expressway because somebody's not paying attention. Your knee-jerk reaction is, oh man, how much damage is to my car? And then you get out of the car and you realize, oh, I'm feeling kind of hurt, whatever body part you're feeling it. You exchange information with the person who caused the accident. You call the police. 24 hours go by, and you realize the person that hit you, even though the law requires them to have insurance, they don't have insurance. That's called insult to injury. And when you see some of these commercials where they talk about turning an initial offer of $12 into $2 million, I mean, you've heard these crazy stories, and maybe they're true. The one thing you have to be concerned about if you're driving the streets of Philadelphia, and frankly anywhere in Pennsylvania or New Jersey, is to make sure that you cover yourself for that unfortunate situation where you get hit by an uninsured driver.
No
There
question
is,
about
you
it.
are really out of luck. And it's called uninsured, underinsured motorist protection. Every insurance company has to provide offer it. And it's another element of coverage that really secures your condition in terms of if you're getting hurt or if you've got income loss and so forth. You have that additional protection in the event somebody's uninsured or underinsured, which means the state minimum in Pennsylvania is $15,000. If you're catastrophically injured and that person's only carrying $15,000 worth of insurance, where are you getting more? Most of these folks don't really have any assets to protect. That's why they have $15,000 in.
That was the next item on the list. Let's dive
I'm
into
always jumping ahead. Sorry.
it now. I got to tell you, John, I was watching the Phillies game last year. And Kyle Schwarber says that getting good insurance rates are better than making it to the World Series. He doesn't. I'm being sarcastic, but not really. You never hear Kyle Schwarber or the Ro Aaron Rodgers or what's his name from the Kansas City Chiefs, the quarterback. You never hear them talk about personal injury protection. They're just talking about the rates. And I can tell you, we all understand why Kyle Schwarber is happy about saving a little cash on his. On his insurance policy, because listen, he signed for 150 mil. He had 100 mil before that, and it's all well and good. I'll be watching the game, Drew. I'm losing my stuff. My wife's going, "What's wrong with you?" This was, years ago as I started to learn this. I'm going, "This is this ridiculous." They have no idea what to talk about. So let's talk about this. Everybody sort of thinks you got great lawyers like you guys. You got a great medical team. Everybody. That'll take care of it. Okay. And by the way, you don't have to worry about me. I got full coverage. Okay. So you fellas don't have to worry about any. Oh, I'm sorry. Full coverage is what? Okay. How many people walk in your office, guys, and have no idea what they actually have and don't know really what? I mean, full coverage isn't really a coverage, right? I mean, let's talk about auto insurance because there's so many people. Driving around right now, walking a tightrope that don't really know what they have. They think they're have so-called full coverage, but they don't. They're watching these commercials, and the only thing they care about is a low rate, but they often aren't covered. Let's start from the top.
Well, low rate, unfortunately, speaks to a lot of people. And if you're trying to make ends meet and you want to save money, one of the first things you're going to look to is where can I save money? Maybe my insurance rates are the place I can start. And you have to be very, very careful because, again, I'm speaking for residents in Pennsylvania. If you purchase insurance, you have the choice of either a limited tort option or a full tort option. And most people really don't know what tort means. It's something we learn in first year of law school. But limited tort is basically a limited right to sue, and full tort is a full right to sue, which means, in the way it's presented sometimes by the insurance salesperson, is, oh, just buy this limited tort, it'll save you money. Is you're still going to be able to sue if you've got really bad injuries. And unfortunately, that's not really true. You folks that have limited tort are really, really compromised in their ability to be fully compensated for their injuries. And I get it. If you're really on a limited budget and in a place like Philadelphia, there's probably a significant price difference between full and limited tort, although I don't know that for sure. I'm speaking out of turn. But I suspect if you're living out in the rural areas of Pennsylvania, the difference between full and limited tort are probably insignificant. So as a consumer who wants to have full coverage, as you call it, you really ought to select what's called full tort, regardless of what your insurance salesperson tells you, because that definitely allows you to pursue a personal injury claim without limitation.
And so let's go down you got limited, you got full tort, you got limited tort, you got uninsured and underinsured motorists, you got PIP. You're in Pennsylvania, you're educating somebody, you're li our listeners right now, okay, who think that they got full coverage. Many who really the definition of full coverage is the body of the auto, the car. Is the only thing covered. They have a minimum amount of personal injury. But talk about if you're going to educate somebody, like John just said, let's start with limited and full tort, and then go to uninsured and underinsured motors and why it's important to get them.
Yeah, so when you have full tort, like John said, and limited tort, that's indicative of your right to recover for what are called your non-economic damages, your pain and your suffering. Most people think if I'm involved in an auto accident that is caused by someone else, and it's clear that the other person was at fault, and I'm hurt, that there at that point is nothing preventing them from being properly compensated. But when you have limited tort, not only do you have to prove that the other person was at fault and that you were injured, you then need to take it a step further, generally speaking, to prove that your injuries are serious. And the insurance companies know, based upon the results at trial, that if they push back on limited tort cases, that oftentimes they're going to win unless the injuries are extremely catastrophic. Now, there's obviously injuries where no one's going to be able to dispute that you have a serious injury. If you fracture a leg or an arm and you have to have surgery, most times you're not going to get pushback on that. But for people who have what are more routine injuries like neck and back complaints, they could
Concussions.
be, and yeah, concussions, those could be extremely debilitating injuries. But they're also the type that insurance companies really fight back on because there's just so many different areas within medicine to try to dispute those claims. If someone, in their 40s or 50s or 60s, God forbid, sustains a back injury in an auto accident, they go, they get an MRI, and there's going to be some findings. And naturally, what happens is the plaintiff is going to argue that, those injuries and those findings are related to an accident, while the other side, they're going to hire a completely independent doctor to say they're unrelated to the accident. And even if you're successful in establishing what you claim to be related to the accident, you still then have to establish that that constitutes a serious impairment of a bodily function. And like I noted before, when those cases are taken to trial, especially in a lot of the suburban counties outside of Philadelphia, the insurance companies have been seeing a lot of success in those cases. And so they know that when someone has limited tort, they can really dig their heels in and push you to the limits in terms of taking the case all the way up to trial and to a verdict because the statistics are so heavily skewed in their favor when they're trying limited tort cases. Now, by contrast, if you spend a little bit extra money and you get full tort, you don't have to establish that your injuries are serious. Now, you can certainly still argue that they're serious when you're arguing how much compensation you're looking for, but it's not a bar to recovery. In other words, it doesn't prevent you from making a recovery if someone doesn't deem your injuries to be quote unquote serious. So it can make the difference of having a case versus not having a case, quite frankly.
When you're thinking, when you're considering, especially if someone's fortunate, how many people don't know when they walk into your office what they
Yeah.
actually have? Is it, I don't mean the exact percentage, Drew. I'm saying, I mean, is it an overwhelming amount of people that walk in and think they got full coverage, or are people more educated now? And one of those reasons is not just because of, I think it should be a fiduciary requirement that a broker makes sure you know everything. I get you, your options. However, a lot of people do this online. All they have to do is, they do it themselves. And, it can be complicated enough when you got a broker. People are making those mistakes. But how many people walk in the office thinking, okay, we got a great firm, we got a great attorney, we don't have, so that's where I'm going to win, where I got it made. And they really don't know what they have.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. The term full coverage is such a an empty, meaningless term, and everyone says it. When you ask them, do you have full tour or limited tour? I don't know. I just know I have full coverage, and it's like that doesn't really mean anything. Like you need to look specifically into whether you have full tour or limited tour.
So John mentioned uninsured and underinsured motorists. I'd like to get into this because it's one of the reasons and an example of why, and it kind of brings everything together. If it isn't, there's, we talked about the amount of people that don't have insurance full, they're not insured. They don't have a high, they're either not insured, it's a hit and run, or, they say in the big city, so many people are either uninsured or underinsured. Okay, I'd like to ask, and I'd like to do it, like expeditiously. But can you give us an anonymous example of, a situation where somebody didn't have underinsured or uninsured or underinsured motorists, something bad happened, and they were left holding, they where they thought they had insurance. And it just fell apart because they didn't have under and under and uninsured motorists.
Yeah, I would say I see this way more often than I'd like, where people don't have any uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage. And it always seems to happen in the most catastrophic cases where people are involved in, and I'll give you this example. This always seems to happen in motorcycle accident cases. And anytime you're on a motorcycle, if you're hit by a car, even if it's at a low speed, you're going to probably be pretty hurt, right? So I've had a couple of cases where folks were on a motorcycle, hit, sustained multiple fractures, and the person that caused the accident, like John said before, the minimum requirement in Pennsylvania is $15,000 worth of bodily injury coverage. And the insurance company, they see right away, oh my God, this person's hurt extremely bad. They offer the full policy limits of $15,000. And that's the best you're really going to be able to do in that situation. And so the next place you turn is to the client to ask them, do you have any underinsured motorist coverage? And you come to find out they don't. And you have to be the bearer of bad news, explaining to them that $15,000 is, in essence, the maximum they're going to be able to get out of this situation. And it's tough because in those cases, you have medical bills that sometimes, are into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it's a very challenging situation for everybody.
So I want to say this to Olivia right now. You're in the same situation I am, and I'll tell you what I meant by that. What I mean by that, I've been fortunate enough to be doing radio with John Zarvanos and Drew for a long time. If you believe in karma or anything like, I am, for years doing these broadcasts, I don't think I checked my insurance, right? And I'm like, you know what? Let me jump on this because I'm doing these broadcast, I'm educating the public. How ironic would it be if I now learned what I learned? And by the way, I called my insurance guy, and he's a friend of mine. He did a good job, and all that. But I felt like I was driving around and taking chances, because once you know this stuff, okay, it's so important to have the coverage yourself. And Drew, what you just said, is got to be some of the hardest stuff ever. So let's go back to educating yourself, right? One of the other reasons why it's important to be educated and call an attorney like John or Drew or the other attorneys at the firm is because you may find yourself in an adversarial situation, because if you do have uninsured and underinsured motorists, now you are picking that claim up. But it's, in a sense, Drew, am I right? You are now suing your putting a claim in, and you're now going to court against your own insurance company, correct?
Yeah, when you make an underinsured claim or an uninsured motorist claim, it's through your own insurance company, generally speaking. Sometimes you're entitled to it through the vehicle that you're a passenger in, if you're a passenger in someone else's car. So that kind of depends. But yeah, generally speaking, when you're pursuing an underinsured or uninsured motorist claim, it's through your own auto insurance company.
Absolutely. So let's obviously continue the discussion. When you know when actually, what is PIP?
PIP is stands for personal injury protection. In Pennsylvania, we are a no-fault state. And a lot of people, myself included, when I first started practicing law, couldn't really quite wrap my head around the concept. When you are in an auto accident, even if you're not in your own car, you have to utilize your own auto insurance to pay for medical bills, even when someone else is completely at fault. So let's just say you get into a car accident, you're driving through an intersection, some drunk driver runs a red light, T-bones you. Most people think, okay, this drunk driver's insurance is going to be picking up my bills. But in reality, it's your own auto insurance that has to pay because of the way the law is set up. So PIP refers to the medical expense coverage that you have under your policy.
Okay, and so having said that, when you're in a situation, and even if it even covers pedestrians, correct? Is there a pedestrian? How does that work?
Yeah, so if you're a pedestrian but you have auto insurance, you would utilize your auto insurance still.
Okay, and at this point, certainly, what is it? What's the minimum in Pennsylvania?
The minimum is 5,000. And even though it's a minimum, I'd say 90% of the time that's what people have. It's almost like the default. Most people have 5,000 in PIP on their policy. And that can disappear pretty quickly. So it's always a good idea to increase that. Obviously, the better coverage you have, the more your premiums may be affected. But it's certainly worth it. If you're hurt, you want to feel like you have sufficient coverage to properly treat and care for yourself.
Okay, and so we look at the entire the gamut of insurance. How often in your world would you review somebody's insurance?
How often would I what review their
Yeah,
insurance?
if a client wanted to come in, and because they a lot of people don't know what they have just by looking at their insurance.
Yeah, I mean, we would do it anytime. Usually that comes up most after an accident when they think they have a certain type of coverage and then they come to find out that they don't. And then you kind of educate them on how they can improve the coverages on their policy. So it definitely comes up.
Okay, so having said that, somebody's listening to this broadcast, and we're talking about the kid, and they're listening, and they're saying, I can't afford these attorneys. Certainly cases, if you had to pay out of pocket for representation, would be a nightmare for somebody. Talk about that, and the fact that the contingency fee agreement is in effect.
I would say that's the great equalizer in these cases is the fact that we work on a contingency, which means that our fee is contingent upon success in the case. We don't charge you anything up front, so there's no expense at the front end or at any point during the course of the case until the case resolves. And it really is amazing how many people don't understand that. I have friends who are educated people, and they always ask me, "What's your hourly rate?" And I have to tell them all the time, "I don't have an hourly rate. We work on contingency," and that's how most of the personal injury world works.
Yeah, and certainly it's a hard concept for even me to understand, because how long does some of the an average we touched on the fact that a lot of these commercials are just ridiculous. The money, the cash bags and all that stuff. And it I'm not saying people don't have their own, some firms don't have their own business model, and whatever it is, God bless them. But literally speaking, when you talk about the contingency fee agreement, okay, these cases can land. It also includes, the fact that you guys are, paying for experts, and these cases can last up to a year, correct? Maybe two. Talk about, The fact that you do not get paid out-of-pocket costs from that client until the case settles, goes to court, or whatever else happens.
Yeah, so above and beyond not getting paid anything from the standpoint of an attorney's fee, we also do, in order to make the case run and operate smoothly, have to incur various different expenses that we directly incur. We don't ever ask our clients to fund their cases. And when cases go into litigation, which they oftentimes can, there are substantial expenses that we have to incur beyond just the normal obvious things like filing fees and stuff like that. We always have to get experts in these cases to put together reports about the injuries and linking the injuries to the incident itself, because even as obvious as that may seem sometimes, we still need a medical doctor to say that. And depending upon the complexity of the injuries, we need various different types of experts. We have life care planners, who are folks who will project future medical costs. If people are so injured that they can't work, we'll have to get vocational experts and economists to attach numbers to the wage loss. And those things can be incredibly expensive, between economists, vocational experts, medical doctors. And if you have to do all those things, the expense of a case can quickly grow, to a sizable bill that, the vast majority of the population, if they didn't have a lawyer, they wouldn't be able to retain those type of experts to help support their cases. And so that's the benefit of working with a lawyer, because most people might think to themselves, well, I can do this on my own. But the bottom line is, do you want to spend, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, $50,000 retaining experts? You don't know what you're doing. And you need these experts in order to make some of the arguments that you want to make that seem pretty obvious.
Because the insurance company have unlimited pockets, they're going to have experts. One of the things that people don't, when they're looking for a law firm, okay, and getting educated is important, but you need an insurance company with the resources to be able to have the best interest and get the best experts for the client, correct?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, again, a lot of these concepts seem pretty obvious. Like, John Doe thinks he was in a car accident. He's got back pain. Now he can just call up the insurance company and say, "Hey, I got back pain." He doesn't understand that they're going to say, "Yeah, but didn't you have back pain 10 years ago too? Didn't you get into a car accident, 2 years ago also? Your MRI, we took a look at it. It looks more degenerative to us than being linked to this accident." And then you suddenly are like, "Oh my God, like it's obvious to me, but I'm getting so much pushback on relatively straightforward things." And that's when you really need experts to come in and assist you with that type of stuff.
Okay, so guys and ladies and gentlemen, I just want you to know we only have 3 hours left, so we're going to be good, just so you understand it. You, especially you, John. But having said that, I'm going to spit. We're going to talk a little medical because I've heard attorneys like yourselves, and I've heard yourselves talk about somebody's injured. Obviously, treating's the most important thing. Okay, and making sure, I mean, these are injury cases, and people can go through a lot over the course of a year or two, and treatment is important. I want to bring Olivia in and talk about what you guys do at Weinemann when you have a case where it may be a long-term injury, it's a legal injury case, and what you offer to the client and to the attorneys, because it's we all hear about the clients, complaining about no communication with the attorney, right? A lot of times that's a year or two you're going in and some things are, but it happens. So we're lucky we've got great attorneys here and great firms that don't have those issues. However, it's not just the clients and the professionals that need to be communicating. It's also the professionals. So you're on the same page. Olivia, talk about at Weinemann what you guys do for the clients. For our listeners, I know we talked about it earlier before the show, but and also for the attorneys so they can work on behalf of the client.
Sure. So everything that we do, honestly, that's if it's either for the patient or for the attorney, they kind of go hand in hand because whatever we're doing is to help the patient get better, which will then help the patient get healthier and help their case in return, and then help the attorney. So it's kind of like one big triangle of helping each other. But basically, Dr. Weinerman has been doing this for 40 plus years. So he has plenty of experience under his belt. He knows what to look for. He knows what he's doing. He knows what to put in the reports. He knows how to get the medical history from the patient, get the most accurate story about their injury. Like Drew said, sometimes we have patients come in that their injury was a while ago. So we really need to tap back into their memory of what happened and how everything went down. And sometimes we get lucky and the case was from yesterday or the week before. So in that case, it's really simple. But Dr. Weinerman will spend an hour or two with every single patient, getting all the details that he needs. He'll testify and do amazing depositions if necessary. So he needs to make sure he has all of the information. And then we'll also, as I said earlier, I actually said it, I think, before we started, but we transport patients to and from any appointments that they have at our facility because, like we're talking today, specifically for auto accidents, if a patient gets into a car accident and they don't have their car or they're too injured to drive, how are we expecting them to get to their doctor's appointment? So we will transport them via Uber or SEPTA, or if they can drive, we will validate their parking. We'll also use Uber to transport them to any specialty appointments that we send them to. So we have a referral specialist who will send our patients out for whatever other consult they need, or an MRI, an X-ray, whatever, ortho, neuro, whatever the case may be. And then as for communication with the attorneys, that's pretty much me. I'm the direct point of contact for all the attorneys. I give everybody my cell. Patients have my cell because I have it with me all the time. So if I'm not in the office one day, I'm still very much accessible. And we handle everything in-house, like I said. So if an attorney needs records or anything from us, we just try to get to them right away because what helps them helps us, and what helps us helps the patient.
Fantastic. We only have 3 minutes. Oh, wait, I'm getting a text from Drew. I want to go another hour. That's crazy. I don't have that kind of time, Drew. Sorry to
Next time.
next time. I'm going to spit fire in the last minute. I've heard it, some of the most important things when it comes to attorneys and clients and our, especially with insurance companies. And I think one of you has mentioned a pre-existing injury or something like that. But the importance of a client's being, they may be afraid. Maybe they did get a high school injury or college sports injury, but it was healed, okay? And now it's 10 years later and they re-injured. The importance of the communication between the client and the attorney, okay? And telling the whole story, as the attorney, you need to be aware of every little fact. Talk about that, because a lot of clients are, a lot of they're hesitant to, to maybe because they'll think you're, maybe mad at them or whatever. The importance of the client has to be upfront with their attorney.
Is that a question for me or Olivia? Sorry.
No, for you.
Yeah, I mean, we want them to be upfront with us, of course, as well as their doctor. I would say communicating with us so that we can monitor their case and help kind of guide them is important. But we do really rely upon offices like Olivia's to take the client under their wing, so to speak, and really guide them from a medical perspective in the beginning. We're the lawyers and they're the doctors. And we rely upon medical documentation almost exclusively when we're presenting these cases. And so, we need them to properly document the injuries. And so we're incredibly reliant upon the doctors that we work with to not just treat the clients, but also send them out to different types of specialists. A lot of our clients will say, oh, I went to this physical therapy place 10 years ago. They were great people. And we've come to find that there's a lot of maybe great medical providers out there, but if they don't know how the medical legal space intersects and how to properly document things, they can be great treaters, but if they're not documenting things appropriately, it can really hinder what arguments we can make down the line. So, having providers that understand not only how to provide care, but also how to, put the claims in the best possible light, through proper documentation, that's important too.
All right, listen, True, you just push this over, man. You got to
I'm
keep
so
these
sorry.
things. Listen, guys, and ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for being on the panel. Contact information, Drew, if somebody wants to get in touch with yourself and the firm.
Once again, our firm name is Soloff and Zervanos, 215-732-2260.
Olivia Giacomucci, somebody wants to get in contact.
We're Wine Room Pain and Wellness on all social media and our website, or they can reach me personally at 267-908-2498 or email me at olivia@wineroompainandwellness.com.
Fantastic. John, contact information or any parting words, my friend?
Best thing I can tell anybody is just go on the website, Soloff and Zervanos. You'll learn everything you need to know about the firm.
Fantastic.
Soloffandzervanos.com.
Soloffandzervanos.com. All right, listen, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Soloff and Zervanos show. We want to thank Drew Von Bargen for being our guest and our featured firm member. Of course, we want to thank Olivia Giacomucci as well. And of course, our host, John Zervanos. On behalf of everybody on the listening and on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. Have a great day, everybody.